My name is Dave Westbrook. Bethel, it's a great time to ask you. How many of you know about America Cities, The Coming Crisis, the documentary film? Keep your hand up for just a second. There's quite a few hands that are not going up. All right. I don't have a copy of it down here. But we have copies of the film here. It's normally $19.95 on DVD. We're selling it today for $15. This is a documentary film that features interviews with leading experts from universities, top universities. There's someone holding it up there. Thank you so much. people from HHS. We interviewed a former associate director of FEMA, a couple of congressmen. We were looking for expert testimony about what's coming to the metropolitan area, and that's what this film is. No narration. It's just a collage of statements from leading experts. And also, in the film, we interviewed a family that tells a story of how they responded to these challenges. So, and there's a couple of features on that DVD I should mention also. Congressman Roscoe Bartlett is probably the leading expert in our nation's capital on electromagnetic pulse. You know about electromagnetic pulse? If a nuclear weapon were sent by a missile to this country, the odds are 9-1 that they really wouldn't even want it to land. They'd rather detonate it high above the country, and it would fry microchips. In fact, one single device placed over the center of the United States could instantly fry virtually every microchip in the country. And you can imagine the impact of that. So we interviewed Congressman Bartlett about that, and that interview is featured on that DVD as well. Okay, let's jump into this. We're moving on here into the question of how to find country property. And I just wanted to quickly talk about our experience a little bit, because it was in 2001, the spring of 2001, before the famous 9/11, that we made our first big move to the country. My wife made a list. What we're talking about in this session is, how do you find country property? What should you be looking for, and how do you look? And we started with a list of what we thought we wanted. Now I'm going to go through a list here. It is my latest version of our list. But there were things, my wife took, you know, promises from the Bible about the Hebrews, who God told them, I will give you wells you did not dig, and houses you did not build, and vineyards you did not plant. And, you know, at one point I said to her, don't you think you're asking for an awful lot here? But her response to me was, well, it doesn't hurt to ask, right? I mean, you can always say no. Might as well. But I was a little concerned when she put no mosquitoes on the list. I thought, you know. And I told her, we're in a world of sin, somebody's got to have mosquitoes, and it's probably us. And so I think maybe you're pushing it. But remarkably, we found this piece of property. And this was our first country property that we moved to. That was the front yard. And she had put on the list, she wanted meadow and mountain views, and you know, dusty orchards that we did not plant. Sure enough, we had cherry trees and apricots and plums and pears and peaches and nectarines. Oh yeah, we had about 100 blueberry bushes there. This is a little flower bed in front that Laura actually did plant a lot of those flowers. And, you know, we wanted a home where we could have people come and we could do some of the kind of work with natural remedies with people that Walt was talking about. My wife's a physical therapist, and so she was interested in a place where we could get people to get out of the city and come out and breathe some fresh air and sort of, you know, change the scenery. And we did some of that in this home. But for a long time, you know, when we would travel around the country and talk about country living, Laura said, you know, you always show the nice pictures, and it's not really fair. So just to be fair today, That was what it looked like the first time we saw it. And it was definitely a lot of work. There's a friend of mine who was teaching me how to do siding. And so we put, you know, it had Ferry County siding on it, which is that black paper that you see there. A lot of homes sometimes, that's as far as they get. It's unfinished. And this was the wall from hell. We had all sorts of problems on that wall. We had to deal with a friend, Mikey, came up to help. And that's Alice, a long time ago. A little child. So, I showed you these pictures because this is my point. We made this move and went through this process starting in the spring of 2001. And over the years, we've been learning some things. And also, we've talked to lots of people who have made similar moves. And they share their story with us and their experience. And so naturally, we're taking notes. We're trying to take all this in. And I hope today that this can serve as offering you a bit of a shortcut, because you don't have to make all the mistakes of people before you. And so that's the purpose of my presentation right now, is to help you avoid. Now, there are mistakes that most likely are going to be made, but I'm all for trying to avoid as many mistakes as possible. How about you? You don't need to have any more than necessary, right? So, we're going to begin with the number one thing on the list. And I will tell you, this is the thing that is consistently underestimated by most people. And I'm frustrated sometimes because when I do try to help people make a good decision about country property, even though I warn them about this, it remains to be the most underestimated the issue of underestimated importance, even after I warn people. So I said that to you in hopes that that will change, and that is water. Water is so vital, and not having enough water is a crisis. Now, I put here number one, surface water, because you can understand that would be ideal in a piece of country property. I hope you can understand why that would be ideal. You don't have to do a whole lot to get to that water. You don't have to pump it up out of a hole 200 feet or whatever. Now, wells have their advantages. But in my opinion, the ideal is surface water. Now, keep in mind, as soon as we say that, that those of us in the room here are not the only people looking for country property right now. There are other people looking for country property too, and there are lots of people looking for surface water. But I'm going to give you a little secret weapon at the end of the list, all right? And so you want to have access to that secret weapon, but I say creek or spring is potentially optimal because it's flowing. Now, it's true if you have a pond, which obviously must have a water source, but there are people who have ponds and they don't have visible flowing surface water. But obviously with a pond, you have the potential for contamination, and you can deal with that. You can filter that water, but it's one more thing you've got to do. And even living on a lake has its advantages too, and there are disadvantages also to being on a lake, but we're talking about surface water. Here's the things that are on my list, because you notice I mentioned that place that we had in past tense. We sold that place, and we are starting over. We're looking for a new country home now, and in telling you that, I hope it will encourage you, those of you who are just getting started, that it's a good time to be doing this, and so why don't you join us and look for your place too, okay? So, here are the things that I ask about water. First and foremost, I'm interested in surface water, and is it year-round? This is very important, because not always, but probably more often than not, if there's a problem with that water going away during the year, usually it's during the dry part of the year, which is when you need it the most. And so we'll talk about how to determine that. The flow or the volume this is fairly simple, usually, to figure out, but it depends on how easy it is to get like a 5-gallon bucket under that flow of water. And you can just use a stopwatch and measure, you know, how long it takes you to fill that 5-gallon bucket, to do the math, to figure out how many gallons per minute. And then the purity of the water is something that, you know, sometimes everybody thinks, well, if you're out in a place like that, surely the water will be clean. But it's not a bad idea to have water tested. It's not that expensive to have it tested. And I wouldn't be as, now with surface water, as in contrast to a well, you have the potential for some contamination taking place. And so even with a creek or a spring, you have the, perhaps, the need to filter it, but you can develop a spring, and you can enclose that spring so that it won't be accessible to wild animals coming and, you know, contaminating it. So a spring has that potential. But purity is something that you could look into. And generally, if you talk to the local well or local pump company that helps people with wells, they can tell you where the best testing facility is around there. And it's generally cheaper to do it yourself. They'll give you instructions, and they'll give you the container, and you can mail it in or take it in physically to a testing facility. Make sure you get a testing facility that has a good reference for accuracy, because if you're going to spend money, then it's worth doing it right. A full-blown water test that tests for everything, at least up in our neck of the woods, I think is around $160 or maybe $200. But for far less than that, you can check for basic contaminants that wouldn't include everything like heavy metals and all of that. And you don't necessarily need to be worried about heavy metals. You can talk to people in that area and ask if heavy metals are a problem, things like, you know, arsenic in particular. Okay, let's talk just for a moment about wells. Wells, the disadvantage of a well is, of course, that you have to have a way to get that water out of there, unless it's an artesian well, which is a lot like a spring and it just comes out. That's pretty rare. More often than not, if it's a well, it's got to be pumped out. So what kind of volume? Now, you'll find differing opinions based on who you talk to, but this is my minimum, my personal minimum, okay, is 3 gallons a minute. How did I arrive at that? Well, for one thing, you know, mortgage companies, many of them will not approve a loan on a home with a well unless it's at least 3 gallons a minute. And people who know how to trick the system can figure out how to make it pass. But I figure if they won't even loan money on it, and I'm trying to put myself in a position to have the advantage of living out in the country and having natural resources, then why would I be okay with that? Now, personally, I'd like to see it higher than that, but that is a bare minimum. And then purity is something that you want to look to when you're thinking about a well, and of course there's a well there. Now, what if there's no surface water? Okay? Now, I'm just going to be frank with you. Right now, on our list, when we're looking for property, we have some points on our list. Right now, we're considering non-negotiable, and one of those is to have surface water. That's something we decided that's going to have to be in place. Now, you don't have to hold to that. Our place that we showed you the pictures there, we had a well there. You know, a well can be very acceptable. If you don't have either, and you're thinking, well, I'll buy this property and I'll drill a well, how can you do that safely? Because you don't know if you're going to get any water. The first thing to do is to talk to the local well drilling company or do some research. Generally, many states have available well logs for a given area. Start to look at those well logs. But an honest driller will tell you what the average depth is and how much flow, on average, that they get. So that's something you would ask. And you could also ask people that live around there. How deep is your well and how much water are you getting? You can also put a weasel clause, that's a crass term, but a clause in a contract for a piece of property that says, if I drill a well and I don't get X number of gallons per minute, I can get out of the deal. Okay, so then the problem is you're going to put the money into the well. How much does it cost to drill a well? That depends on how deep it is and where it is. But typically it can be anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 to drill a well. So you really have to weigh how you want to approach this. Same issue on the purity of a well also. So Something that we discovered more recently is of concern is uranium in well water. And if I were going to test a well, it's about $27 extra, at least up where we live, to find out if it has uranium in it. That's a pretty cheap price to pay to know that in advance. You can have a well with uranium in it and drink the water and glow. No, I'm sorry, that wasn't really what I was going to say. You can get a filtration system that costs about $5,000 to make the water potable. So all these things need to be factored in. All right, number two, the slope. Why does the slope matter? Well, for one thing, if you have property that's too steep, then you don't have a lot of usable land for agriculture. And after listening to Brad, I'm sure you're all anxious to have a much bigger garden than your patio now, right? And so, however, having some slope is good. And so I put the order of slope, and really, I don't even want this on my list, okay? But it's the order of best to worst. And a south slope, a slight slope to the south, is good for agriculture because it's going to maximize the impact, if you will, from the sun, the benefit from the sun, by having a little slightly southern slope. There are people who have a west slope, and they say that it works pretty good for them. And so that would be next on the list. And the east slope starts to get a little bit more like a north slope, and the north slope is the least desirable for a number of reasons other than agriculture. I mean, you have the issue with the north slope of it's the last place where the snow melts. And so it's going to be cold there, and the ground is going to warm up much later than on the south slope. All right, let's talk for a minute about number three on my list, timber. I put up here 5 acres minimum. What I mean is 5 acres of timber minimum. Now, I'm sure there's differing views on this, but generally, the theory is that if you have at least five acres of timber, that it could provide a sustainable supply of wood to heat your house without depleting that supply. And that's a very important function. It's really something that should fall into the category of alternative energy, is wood heat. Sometimes we just think about electricity, but really this is an alternative energy issue. Now I put here number two, perimeter is ideal. What I mean by that is having a piece of property with timber all around the perimeter would be ideal, right? What's the reason? Privacy, I heard somebody say it. Privacy, you've got a buffer. And you might think that, wow, we're talking 10, 15, 20 acres. I mean, isn't that privacy? When we bought our first place, which I showed pictures of, that was 20 acres. In my mind at that time, I was thinking, man, 5 acres would be, you know, like a state park, wouldn't it? I mean, but I'll never forget the morning I got up and Laura called and she said, hey, come look at this. And I looked out the window where she was pointing and I saw a tree. It's amazing, a pine tree, and it just went like this. I'm not exaggerating, it just went just like that. And I blinked and I looked again, and pretty soon another tree. And I hiked on down there, and here was a machine that was reaching out and grabbing trees, and the chainsaw would cut it off, and then he would figure out where am I going to lay it down, and he'd put it down. And I stood there for a while and watched him drop a tree across our fence and break our fence. Well, then he saw me standing there, and so we had a nice conversation about, you know, property lines and stuff like that. But all of a sudden, 20 acres got very small. And so trees, and we had one whole side of the property that didn't have a buffer of trees. And so anything that the neighboring owner does to his property is right there. And so it's something to consider. Now I put the type of trees here. Walt talks about pine sap, right? And, you know, I know there's certain kinds of pine, but I mean, I like pine trees. fir trees. We have tamarack up where we are. Tamarack, by the way, the type of tree also has to do with the energy that you can get out of that wood when you go to heat your house. Some woods burn better than other woods. Some woods burn cleaner. You need to find out in the area you're looking at what are the good wood-burning woods, and you should be looking for those kind of trees. And there's also that natural remedy benefit of pine and fir. That is nice to have. And then I put here number, that's supposed to be number four. I guess it looks like I can't count. Beware of bad logging jobs. Now, the only reason I put that there is because I noticed while we lived in Washington that people would come up from, I'll just say, California. And would oftentimes overpay for a piece of property that had been badly logged, but they weren't used to seeing a lot of trees.
Right.
And so to them, it looked good. And I started to discover that particularly logging companies will strip their land and look for buyers that don't understand the value that they just removed from that land.
Wow.
People from far away who are anxious to find that dream property and will overpay for property. And I discovered that logging companies will not generally have a fair price on their land after they log it. They will give the same price it had before they logged it, and yet they took a lot of value out of it. So that's kind of a warning. If you want a piece that has been badly logged, you should get a very good price for it. Okay? Let's talk about neighbors. Neighbors, number one, how many? Well, as few as possible. I love people, though, really. That's not a, it doesn't sound nice, does it? But, you know, we all need our space, right? And when you live in a country, that space just kind of expands a little bit, and it's a nice thing. And we really have been blessed with a lot of good neighbors. And I'm very thankful for that. We have friends that have had some bad experience with neighbors. How do you find out? Now I say how many. Well, I don't have a number. I don't have a rule. I do know this. I'm looking for a piece of property on which I can't see my neighbors. Okay? And they might not be that far, but I can't see them. So to me, that's important. And that goes back to that privacy issue. And it also relates, it does relate to how close, far enough away that I can't see them. Now, I recommend you here to talk to the neighborhood. I think it's a good idea to talk to the neighborhood. You might find out about a bad neighbor. Now, sometimes people don't want someone moving into their neighborhood. And they kind of like the fact that things are really quiet. So what's going to happen if you talk to those people? They're going to tell you all the bad stuff about that place, right? But actually, I think I'd like to hear that to help me to be really objective. Go ahead and tell me all the bad stuff. They might open up and be friendly and tell you, you know, we think we ought to warn you that there's a neighbor over there, you're going to have to pass his house. Let me tell you a little story. A friend of ours, they had a bad neighbor experience. And it got so bad that they actually had to move. And all they had to do was drive past his place. But he started to threaten them. Now, I will tell you, all the people we talked to who've moved out of the city, and there's been a lot of them, that's a fairly unique story. But it is a real story. And so it's important to have that on the list. Okay? Next, and by the way, these aren't necessarily in order of importance. I probably should have put them in order of importance, except for water. I put that first. Climate. Well, there's a question of the growing season. Every place has a different one, and you can be fairly close. I just learned that an area not very far from where we live right now, we're renting a place in the country right now, has, as I recall, more than a month longer growing season. And it's only less than 2 hours away. So it's important to try and determine that. I'm sorry, I should have fixed this. You can't see the text. I'll give you the website here to help you
find out growing season for different areas. This is www.csreeves.usda.gov. Did you catch that? www.csreeves.usda.gov/extension. You can also talk to your local extension or university extension. Look in the phone book for that area, talk to the people in the county offices, and they can connect you with the local extension office, where you'll find people that have expertise in agriculture, and they will give you all kinds of information for free. And they also have information on things like the growing season. Another thing about climate is the precipitation. How much water do they receive, and does it come mostly in the form of snow or rain? And I put a website here, I think you can see that one. You can write that one down, where you can find precipitation. The precipitation map for the entire United States. And you can zoom in on different states, different areas within states, and find out what the precipitation, the average annual precipitation is for that area. Typical snowpack is a useful question. I would think that would be of great interest to people living in Southern California. People I talk to down here are generally a little bit skittish about snow, and it's not all that bad. I think get used to it. But, you know, I don't blame you. I'm appreciating warmth more and more the older I get. So it's a good thing to look into. And then the average days of sunshine, and I thought I had a website. Well, I'll have to see if I can look that up. By the way, let me say this right now or I'll forget. If you haven't already signed up on preparelosangeles.com, it's the website for this meeting. You can do that. And anything that we need to add to notes or we want to get some more resources out, we'll continue to do that through that email list. So if you haven't signed up, and I know that many of you did, but if you haven't, you can still do that. And we'll keep putting resource material out there through that website. Okay. Air. Why do we have to talk about air? I thought everything out in the country has got to be clean. Generally, that's the case. There are some rare cases where, because of prevailing winds, sometimes even pollution and smog will kind of be driven into a valley or a little bit of a pinch in the mountain. And you can actually have a strange scenario where you have bad air in what should otherwise be a great location. And a lot of that, of course, you can find out just by going there. But this one here is an interesting one that someone called me about several years ago, and I dismissed their concern without researching it, which was a big mistake. Someone called me and said, I'm interested in your area up in the Northwest, but I've been doing some research and I discovered that it is a high radon area. Well, what happened was we had some neighbors that discovered that they had uranium in their water. So some of the concerns I'm sharing with you have come from experience or experience of neighbors and friends. So naturally, all of us ran out and tested our wells. But then someone shared with me that oftentimes uranium in the water is present because it comes from the breakdown, that the breakdown of uranium produces radon. And you can have higher levels of radon in the vicinity of uranium. So then everybody went out and tested their homes for radon levels. We had some friends that recently came to visit us at our new place, and I noticed on Sunday morning when I got up to go feed the horses and everything, they were still slumbering, and I thought to myself, boy, it must be a nice life sleeping in late like that. But later they got up and were telling me how sleepy they had been feeling. And they started to tell me about the place where they were renting. They were renting a little small area in a garage, actually, and they were caretaking. In fact, they weren't renting. They were being allowed to stay there for free. Country property, caretake the home, stay in the garage. Their bird died, which they didn't know what to make of at first. But then they started to notice that their little pet rabbit, if he was inside too much, would start wheezing. And so I mentioned to them this issue about radon, and I had a radon detector, and I gave it to them, and they went home at the end of that weekend and called me a few days later, and they had dangerously high radon in that garage, and that no wonder they had been sleepy, and drowsy. And you know, radon is, as I understand it, the second leading cause of lung cancer. This is an important issue, and if you go to the EPA website, just punch it in on Google, EPA, you'll get this map, and you'll notice the red areas are areas that are known to typically be problematic for radon. The yellow are not. The yellow are fairly safe. But you can notice, isn't it interesting, all up here in the northern part of the United States. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody has radon up there. It just means that there's a higher incidence of it, and you need to look out for that. If you're building a home, you can build it in such a way that the radon will be ventilated out of the house. It won't be a problem. But older existing homes may not have that. And so this, to my knowledge, is the best live testing device available. And you know, you may not ever need to know this, but if you want to jot it down in your notes, it might save you time later. The Safety Siren Pro, I think it costs about $100. But getting radon tests is really tricky. It takes a couple days. Here's the thing, if you're looking at a property, you know, you might wonder, well, how would I test it for radon? You could leave this device plugged in. Some of them might say, well, how do I know they're not going to mess with something? Well, the more they do to swirl the air around it, probably the higher the levels would get if it's there. That's my understanding. But the other thing is that that device will not give a reading for 48 hours. There will be no reading. So they won't be able to play with it. And if you time your return correctly, you can catch a reading and you'll have a good idea of what the radon level is in that house. Okay, I got a raise here. I'm running out of time. Some other issues to consider when you're looking for country property. Government. What kind of regulations are there that could hamper your style, okay? Number one, homeschool. Here's a website, hslda.org. And get the /laws in there and default ASP. That'll save you time. You can still find the maps there on the sidebar. But that's the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And they have a map there of the United States, and you can see what the homeschool laws are for various states. And if you're a homeschooler, you want to know that. There's things like building codes. Building codes vary from county to county. And some counties are very friendly. There are a few places still that are very friendly. Regulation is kind of going everywhere. You know, California is the trendsetter, so. Number three, business regulations. What kind of regulations would there be that might inhibit you in business? Some places have a lot of liberty for doing all kinds of business and not having a lot of regulation and permitting and that sort of thing. And you can find all that information by talking to the county office and looking on the state in which you're searching for property. Where to look? Internet is powerful. Craigslist, I think, is pretty good. Newspapers, classified papers, realty publications, and I should have added to the list friends who live in an area and they can be looking for you. And I did put, of course, here, I know it's number four, no offense if you're a realtor, realtors, but I'm just going to say really quickly, it's challenging to find a realtor that understands what I'm looking for, because it's not typically what most people are looking for. For a lot of realtors, what I'm looking for would be considered the dog of their available properties. I want a place that doesn't have great access necessarily. I want a place that doesn't have improvements, doesn't have power. Why? Why do I want those things? Cheaper, lower price. Okay? I want a place that's out. A lot of people don't want to be out. I want to be out. And so and I find that it's difficult for me to convince realtors that this is really what I'm looking for. So you have to find a realtor that believes you. And you might have to shop a little bit to find such a realtor. Maybe you'll hit it right the first time. When to look. Start now, of course. But I put three other things here on the list. When water is scarce, this is the best time to look at the property. That's when it's dry. August, September. Mid-September is kind of ideal up in the Northwest. If you're concerned about access, you want to look when access is bad. If you're concerned about what it's going to be like when it's cold, then you need to look when the day is short, like January. But the number one thing for me is
I like to look when water is scarce. We're coming up on such a time, by the way, right, the end of this summer, but it's important to start looking now so you can start getting the hang of looking for property and talking to people. Okay, quickly, how to look, research an area. I'm big on recommending that people rent for a while. It's true, you're going to be dumping money into somebody else's property. But listen, if it saves you from getting a property in a place where you decide you don't want to be, then it's well worth the investment. And it also positions you in a place where you can start to find out about deals locally. Okay? So set your parameters and use technology like Google Earth. Google Earth, it will save you tons of time. You don't have to go look at every piece of property. We've ruled out all kinds of property with Google Earth. People tell us it's a beautiful piece of property. I start zooming in on Google Earth. You know what Google Earth is, right? You can just type in Google Earth on Google. You can get on, it doesn't cost you anything to use the service. And I start zooming in and I notice the piece of property that they're pitching to me is surrounded by green and it's brown. I'm not even going to get in my car, right? I zoom in a little more to see if it's been logged to death or whatever. So you can save a lot of time that way. And here's my secret weapon. Here's the secret weapon. You want an edge to find country property? Pray. Pray to your Creator. He wants you to find it more than you want to find it. Okay? And He can help you. All right. We're going to move on to the next one. Thank you very much.